talking and I'm not, and I'm just and then I'm
no, but wait, wait, I have something for him.
Boom, you get shot down.
Now you're just fucking me, aren't you?
I'm just wondering why all these people like kids.
The Weird History and Eerie Tales Podcast.
Concentrating on the news. That's what we do.
Wow.
FYI, there's nothing wrong.
And welcome everybody to another episode of the Weird History Eerie Tales Podcast. I am your host, Moses Soria. And today, I am doing something different. So for the past couple of episodes, I've been promoting my other podcast, the Tome of Monsters Podcast, a movie pop culture podcast where each week we break down the monster of the week. Everything from inspiration all the way to inception. So I thought it would be a fun idea to show you guys what I'm talking about. Literally, and letting you hear what are the five episodes we have up. So here is our episode, Chapter 2, Cenobites, where we put on our best daddy leather outfits while we traverse down to the disgustingly beautiful labyrinth home of Pinhead and his horny gang of rascals, who we all know are angels to some, demons to others.
The Tome of Monsters Podcast.
All right, welcome everybody to another chapter of the Tome of Monsters Podcast. I'm your host, Moses Soria.
I'm Luis.
And I'm Fernando.
And today we're going to be talking about Cenobites. Cenobites? I still don't know how to pronounce it. It's been pronounced different ways. But that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to talk about the backstory, about the Cenobites. If you guys don't know, we're talking about the Hellraiser series, or the antiheroes.
Yeah,
that's what we're gonna be talking about today. Lore, backstory, all of that good stuff. And we're even gonna be talking about the newest addition to the Hellraiser franchise, which has a lot of garbage. Outside of the first two, you don't need to watch the other ones.
Depends. Depends on if you want backstory on certain characters or whatever. Or if you want to see them in space.
So, Hellraiser is a horror media franchise that consists of 11 movies. It's 11 movies, bro. Is there... And we talk... And people talk shit about the Fast and the Furious movies?
Wait, how many is that up to right now?
They're going to 10?
Okay.
Yeah, and each one has made more money. This is the complete opposite of Hellraiser. The Fast and the Furious movies, they make more money each movie.
Yeah.
The Hellraiser made less money each movie.
Each
movie had less money to make.
There's no straight-to-DVD Fast and Furious movies. So.
There isn't. Like, outside of the what? First two Hellraiser movies? The rest went straight-to-DVD?
No, I think... I want to say probably like the first, maybe six?
Really?
I don't know. I'm pulling the number out of my ass. All right.
So yeah, it's 11 movies, okay. Two novels, and a comic book series. Mm-hmm. The comic book series is really fascinating to me. I was reading some online, and I love Aztecs, and it dives into that, but more on that later, you know. All stemming from the Hellbound Heart story written by Clive Barker, who also wrote and directed the first Hellraiser movie, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a pretty sick little... Because how many writers of books go on to direct the film?
Yeah. The film version of their book.
Yeah. It's got to be what? Less than five, I want to say? I could be wrong.
I couldn't think of any.
Yeah, I couldn't. I'm pretty sure that directed the movie. If they were involved in it, sure.
Involved, like, directed? Yeah. Ready Player. I'm thinking. No, yeah. I can.
Michael Crichton. He was involved as a director,
as a producer, writer, all that. But he did motherfucking directed it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know. So like I said, he was directed, wrote the first Hellraiser movie, whose plot line focuses on a little puzzle box for the criminally horny and feral. That serves as a portal to another dimension full of spankings where a demon or angel spits in your mouth during a nice relaxing session of bondage with some really heavy knife play. That's basically the Hellraiser movies. Demons to some, angels to others is a very famous fucking catch line from the movie that kind of that really describes the Cenobites all in, like, to like almost a T. Yeah. So these beings have a name. And no, I'm not talking about like sir, ma'am, or daddy. But the names are Cenobites. And am I wrong? But is the newest installment, the one that came out on Hulu, is that the first time we hear the name Cenobite?
Not sure.
Because like in the actual movie, they say Cenobite. Maybe, all right, I'm going to be honest with you. Outside of the first four, I didn't watch the other 97 of them.
Yeah.
You know? So they might be so they might have said Cenobite, whatever. But I can't remember it. Definitely not in the first two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was kinda like, oh shit. Like when we were watching, you know, the latest installment, I was like, oh, they said Cenobite in the movie. That's fucking nuts. Yeah. They're like, oh, he said it. You know, but these Cenobites who deliver an eternity of torture to those who go about solving and opening this little puzzle box. And that's where our focus is going to lie on today. No, not the daddy. Well, I mean, we're going to talk and focus on the Cenobites rather than the movie. And to really do that, we kind of have to take it back a few years to 1987, back to the first Hellraiser movie, where in a combined 7 minutes of total screen time, the Cenobites cemented their status as horror movie icons. That's how much screen time they had total.
In the first movie?
In the first movie. Seven minutes.
Bro, I swear they're in the movie like 80% of the movie.
It's just seven minutes.
Build up to actually seeing them. Okay.
And like a bat shat out of hell, once the movie starts, they are gone. Gone almost as fast as they arrived. We get quick flashes of them in the beginning. A close-up of Deep Throat. More on that later. Pinhead's hands, and he picks up pieces of flesh. A shot of Pinhead himself, and then poof. Sensory overload over. That's what that initial scene is. It's just a bunch of images of the Hellraiser just nails you over the head. Just bam, 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 and then it's gone.
Nails you over the head. Literally. I see what you did there.
You see what I did there?
Yeah.
And it's like crazy because like I saw Hellraiser a few years ago thanks to Louie over here, right?
Yeah.
And that's the first thing that caught my attention. I thought Pinhead and Hellraiser were going to be like another Freddy Krueger, another, you know, like Jason Voorhees. You're just a standard. But right off the bat, you're just like, what the fuck is going on? The second the movie starts, you're just bombarded with gore and these images of these Cenobites that you just immediately start asking a fucking million questions. And it's not until later in the movie when we finally see the Cenobites in all of their foul glory that we begin to realize, oh, this is fucking different. This is just this weird behemoth of a psychopath in a mask who had been dropped on his head a few too many times. This was 100% new to the horror genre. Sure, 1984's Dune had these weirdos dressed in long leather robes. They were also bald and had sores and scars all over them. Even the bald witches give off female Cenobite vibes. Even though the Cenobites, if their look was influenced by Dune, took the inspiration and ran straight to hell with it. Because the first time I saw Pinhead, the first time I see these Cenobites, there's no point of reference for me. I'm not like, oh, I've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, this is completely fucking new. Like, there's point of references for almost everybody. That's how I was with Freddy, too. Freddy's one of those characters, too, where I'm like, oh, this is new to me. First time I saw The Nightmare on Elm Street, I'm like, oh, I've never seen this before. Like, there's no point of reference for him, so I'm just immediately intrigued. I'm like, oh, okay, you got my undivided attention. Is that how you guys felt the first time you guys saw the Cenobites? Were you just like, oh, this is kind of weird, like in that good, like, oh shit.
Uh-huh. Well, I think I speak for a lot of people who were like 80s kids or whatever, but like that VHS cover of the first Hellraiser was just Pinhead. And I, what is he holding the puzzle box?
Yeah, it's...
I don't remember if he's holding it. Yes, that one. Like, that's so iconic. And just seeing that, like, I wanted to watch the movie just based on that image alone.
I was the complete opposite. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, let me go the aisle. Let me go over here. Where is Banjo-Kazooie again? Walking through Blockbuster. I'm like, just turn the other way. Just turn the other way. Like, I would always avoid the horror movie section. Like, when, like, in comic books, in like comic book stores. In, yeah, when I used to go rent movies. That, you know, it was just like porn and horror. It was in the same section.
Two sections you don't want to go down.
Behind the beaded wall of a morbid curiosity. We're like, Dad, why are you going in there? He's like, shut up. Go bring your fucking game. I'm like, yes, sir.
The two sections I frequently visited. The wrestling section and the horror section.
Wrestling and horror.
That's it.
Is that how you were too? Like the first time? Do you remember the first time you saw Hellraiser?
Initially, it did, like, as far as like the whole kind of leather demon thing, like being pale and like the leather, kind of like reminded me of like shit. I don't know. Like I never really watched it. I would say till like the last 5 years when I first saw it initially, but like it's not something that. I saw it, like, I never really went in to watch it until, like, just recently, like I said, 5 years ago. But
so both of you watched it pretty recently.
Yeah.
Then. Okay.
Yeah. Do you remember, how old were you when you watched it?
I don't know. Like, 16, 17? I wasn't that young, no.
Oh, so you didn't watch it, like...
No, not as a kid, no. I just remember the movie cover with Pinhead on it.
All right, so... You guys can't see this, but you know, Louis is pointing to one of my point of references for today's episode. It's called "The Hellraiser Films and Their Legacy" by Paul Kane, and the cover is literally the cover, the VHS cover from the original Hellraiser movie. If you guys want to learn more about Hellraiser and like its lore and stuff, please pick up this book. You guys could find, I'll post a link on the episode show notes if you guys want to buy it. It's like a $30 book. It's fucking fantastic. It's a really good book. Yeah, but like I said, the inspiration from, the characters from Dune, they kind of do give, like, you kind of see the, like the resemblance. But I think that's where it ends. And, like there is a, like, direct line of influence in Clive Barker's life that you could trace back to, like, oh, this is where the inspiration for the Cenobite, fucking
starts. Came from.
It spawned from, So Clive Barker, when he first went down to London, he found himself working a couple of centerfolds for some S&M magazines. That's Clive Barker as fuck for you. which were eventually burned because of the content by the Scotland Yard. Which gave Barker an even bigger boner. He's like, so he went over to London, photographed, did a bunch of things for this S&M magazine. And then when the magazine came out, the police grabbed all the magazines and burned them. And Kai Barker took that as a, like, oh shit, like, I'm doing something bad. Sick. He's like, nice. Like, he didn't take an offense to it. He's like, oh, all right, I'm grossing people out. Which is eventually what he ended up becoming fucking infamous for.
Yeah.
With all his fucking stories. So his interest in the taboo parts of our society have really impacted his art and really shows with the Cenobites, as you can trace their line of origin to this very incident. So Barker had initial sketches he'd come up with to help everyone at the studio visualize what he wanted, which was this look of a modern primitive, but perversely styled with clothes that intermingled with the wounds they had inflicted on themselves, said Barker. So even from the get-go, he already had this image of like these... beings butchered, but like they're looking like, yeah, they're gross, but they're like flying. Like, make them stylish. Like, they are gory as fuck. But have them looking fit.
Yeah, they could definitely walk a runway somewhere in Paris.
Right? Yeah. Like, that's a Met Gala look.
Yeah.
That's a Met Gala look.
He invented the Met Gala look, basically.
So here's the actual description of the Cenobite. From the story, Hellbound Heart.
Why then was he so distressed to set eyes upon them? Was it the scars that covered every inch of their bodies? The flesh, cosmetically punctured and sliced and infibulated, then dusted down with ash? Was it the smell of vanilla they brought with them? The sweetness of which did little to disguise the stench beneath? Or was it that as the light grew and he scanned them more closely, he saw nothing of joy or humanity in their maimed faces? Only desperation and an appetite that made his bowels ache to be voided.
So even, like, from the get-go, you're just like, what are you talking about? Like, it's such a weird, like, I literally have, there's no point of reference for me for this. So when he's describing this to me, I'm like, I can't fathom this. You know, like, and I've never had that, like, mental block, like, from as far as I can, like, you know, I'm reading Lovecraft, he mentions Cthulhu, Cthulhu, whatever, dragon's octopus head, all right, cool, whatever, and then he mentions, you know, like, fucking in the Hound, he mentions, like, this morbid, this room of morbid curiosities, and he describes, like, little thing. I'm like, all right, I could picture everything. At the Mountains of Madness, I could picture all of, I could picture the weird angles and the upside down. And I'm like, all right, I could see that. But when I was reading The Hellbound Heart, because that's where I first learned of Clive Barker. I read Clive Barker before I saw Clive Barker. So even reading it, I was like, I cannot compute this. Like, I have no point of reference for any of this, because, like, I'm not too big on body horror or, like, gore. That's not my thing. My thing is more like Victorian Gothic horror, like, you know, like Crimson Peak and, like, fucking Interview with the Vampire. That's my shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. Body horror and gore is not really my thing. So when he's talking about these mutilations, I was like, what the... I'm not computing. Like, it does not hit me right.
So if it wasn't for the movies, would you still be like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Oh, yes. For the longest time. Well, not for the longest time. Maybe just from when I read the book.
Yeah.
I just picked them like this weird mass of skin that's, like, just mutilated.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I didn't picture, you know, fucking goddamn fucking The Matrix, you know, like these leather clad fucking scarred. I did not picture that. It sounds weird, but I was like, this, and I'm going to keep saying it. There's no point of reference in my head for any of this. So it was like weird. It was a weird read for me. And I read that maybe when I was 20, 21, okay, around there. Yeah, I was just like, I don't know. And then the first movie I ever saw of Clive was The Meat Train.
Midnight Meat Train?
Yeah, The Midnight Meat Train. That was okay. The first movie ever.
That one's good. I liked it.
I loved it a lot. That's a very Lovecraftian movie. It's very hard. There's a lot of gore, but at the end you're just like, "Oh, what are these elder things?" It's like, "Yes, please." Like, yeah. It had like this weird cosmic horror element to it, which caught me by left field. It caught me off guard. I was like, "Holy shit!" But and that's as gory as I've gotten. And that movie's pretty fucking gory.
You know, when you said Matrix, that kind of describes it pretty perfectly. When you like the way they look, that's very fucking Matrix. That's Neo. That's fucking like the whole skin tight leather kind of shit. I did see that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. See, but like, that's only because of the movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even then, my point of reference is The Matrix comes like 20 years after The Hellraiser. When did The Matrix come out? 2000?
Like 99, 2000?
All right, all right, 15 years. Hellraiser came out 84. Mm. So my point of reference came out after the fucking movie. Like, you know, so it's just like, I don't know. That's what makes them so unique. You know, but, you know, we're going to... More on that later. Shut up. Shut up, guys. You know, so when it came to finally fleshing out and bringing to life his Angels of the Macabre, he gave the movie's costume designers an indication to the direction he wanted them to go in. First, being that there had to be areas of flesh revealed through their clothing to show that there is some sort of torture going on, or to show the scars of torture being had. And secondly, he just said two words. And when I read this, I was like, duh. He just said, repulsive glamour.
That pretty much describes it.
Yeah. I was like, holy shit. Yeah. I was like, those are the exact words he used to describe the fact that he wanted some butchery being involved. That this should be magnificent super butchers. He's like, just give me some super butchers. Just repulsive glamour. I was like, fuck. Like, if you know Clive Barker, you know that that little phrase, repulsive glamour, is a perfect description of him and the work he does. Dealing in the beauty of the macabre and the attraction we, as the observers, have to his unique images, his words paint. So there's a quote that I find funny because of how fucked up but on point it is when it comes to dealing with today's topic. And he says, Clive Barker goes on to say this: I certainly get a lot of letters from people who think that Pinhead, for all his strange uniqueness, is sexy and endearing. When I read, I was like, who the fuck is watching Hellraiser and immediately thinks, you know what? I'm going to rub one out. What? I was like, who's doing this?
I mean, Pinhead is a leather daddy, though, so, like, you know, it kind of makes sense.
In a world where there was a time where everyone wanted to fuck Venom and Pennywise, I was like, all right, I'm not surprised. Like, you know, like, when Venom first came out, my Twitter was blowing up with everybody's like, oh, what that, all these girls going wet, oh, like, oh, I wonder what that tongue does, la, la, la. And then fucking Pennywise comes out, the It remake. So then everyone got wet over Pennywise.
I didn't get that one at all.
It's just because he was tall.
Oh.
He was tall, which is why I'm assuming why Dead by Daylight, you guys know that game?
Yeah.
Like 90% of the fucking people playing are girls.
What?
Everybody I know that plays Dead by Daylight, they're all girls.
But what's the creature or whatever that
they all of them they want to fuck every single one of those monsters from fucking Jason to Ghostface.
Oh, okay.
Like, I guess they like they die on purpose. Like, oh yeah, let me get choked.
Like, I mean, rather than that, than chasing inmates or something, you know.
To each their own. But seriously, I was like, what sick fuck pauses Hellraiser's like, yep, I'm gonna rub one out. But it's, you know, but it's like, I think that this is why Hellraiser has endured for as long as it has. Because Pinhead has become the embodiment for this type of thinking, where you see these strange disfigurements and you don't think they're gross or repulsive. Plus, it also doesn't hurt that they look cool as fuck. Because let's face it, the horror genre as a whole is built on the foundation of aesthetic.
Yep.
Or iconography, you know what I mean? Like, we love vampires not because they suck blood and are immortal, it's because they look fucking cool in their capes and their fangs. You know, everyone is wet over Ghostface because of the mask. And you can kind of go down the list of all these horror titans and you realize how aesthetically superior they are for the most part.
Time out, though. Just talking about it right now. I'm like picturing it in my head. How many of these icons of horror are fuckable? Like, Leatherface is a pudgy dude in like a butcher apron and a dead skin mask. Okay. Would you fuck that guy? Probably not.
Me personally, no.
Okay. No. Jason Voorhees, he was like a deformed child who is now like a zombie killer guy.
But he's like 6'4".
But still, you don't.
Six, as long four, as he doesn't take his he's mask tall off,
you don't see people like lusting over him.
You don't.
I don't personally. I don't. Maybe I'm on the wrong side of Twitter.
You're on the right side of Twitter. I want your goddamn timeline.
Even Michael Myers, who's like a tall dude, pretty normal from, you know, what you can tell, because you can't really see him without his mask that much there that often. But he just has like a, like the mechanics coveralls and whatever. But like you look at Pinhead, you want to fuck that guy. Out of those, if you had all those guys in a lineup, who you fucking?
The only I think the only reason you want to fuck Pinhead is after you hear him talk.
Oh, I didn't even bring that up, bro.
After, like, you see him, you're like, you know what? I don't know. And then you hear him talking, and you can bullshit yourself. You're like, he has a nice personality.
That accent.
Yeah, it's that English accent. That English accent doesn't the accent fucking and the hurt.
Tone of the tone of choices of the words he uses are...
I'm going to talk... Yeah. That, he's a fucking poet. This goddamn fuck machine. Like, he could have... Out of everything he could have been, he decided to be a fucking interdimensional... Fucking, what do you
you said he's a master or whatever?
No, I was gonna say what is it, the dudes in porn who warm up the
fluffer?
Yeah, this interdimensional fluffer. You know, but like all these like every huge horror movie icon, whatever, is they all look, name me one that does not, that is, name me something that's big and hard that does not look cool. There are things that aren't cool that they kind of suck, but they kind of, but because they look cool, you kind of like give them a pass. Like for me, that's Terrifier.
Yeah. What? That's what?
Terrifier?
Terrifier?
Terrifier. Yeah.
It sounded like you said Tire Fire. That's how I was like,
oh, what? No. Terrifier. He looks cool as shit. But you're just like, oh, I've seen this before. Like, yeah, it's just
a clown.
Yeah. Like, and he's not even the best clown.
No.
You know? It's like,
I might get canceled for this.
Say it. Please say it.
I'm going to say
it. Say it, please.
Freddy Krueger looks lame. Like, if it wasn't for the fucking, like, the glove with knives on it. Like, he's wearing, like, a Christmas sweater. It looks like a Christmas sweater. Like, khaki slacks. A fedora. But, like, if it wasn't for the actor playing the character.
Yeah, the actual.
But I could tell you this, because I could comment on this firsthand.
Uh-huh.
He's funny.
He is
funny. Oh, he's funny. Yeah, he is funny. Yeah.
He's funny.
Yeah.
He's funny. Like how he's...
That goes a long way.
Oh, my...
Personality.
Bro, I'm telling you. Funny, bro. Funny. You know, but like... every cool horror movie, everything that's huge in the horror genre looks cool as shit. And the Hellraisers, not only do they look cool as fuck, they are a thing unto themselves that you can't compare them to anything else. Like maybe the Matrix, but even then they came before the Matrix.
Yeah.
Like what? Just because they're like in black leather, like that's the only reason. If that's the case, fucking they're Judas Priest too. You know what I mean?
The one thing that reminds me of the Cenobites, Cabin in the Woods, that one creature that's in leather that has a fucking like saw blade through his head.
Oh yeah,
that
was
like an homage to.
Yeah, that was an homage to.
Yeah, because they couldn't use any of these IP, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I saw it on Saturday. Like, oh yeah.
Dude, I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I remember the first time I saw it, I fucking loved the shit out of it. But, you know, back to Hellraiser.
Back to Hellraiser.
And a big part of Hellraiser's stardom is Pinhead. Mm-hmm. And for as much as he is lauded for looking cool, you cannot say this about anybody else. He sounds even cooler, bro. And that is 1,000% all thanks to Doug Bradley, the actor that made Pinhead the macabre daddy that he is. Outside of maybe it's Pinhead and Jason. I mean, Freddy.
Freddy.
Those are the only two that you're like, whose voice is as iconic as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't like, and not just because they're recognizable, but just because they are a huge part of that role.
I would throw in Chucky in there as well.
Okay, you're right. All right, Chucky. All right,
that laugh.
So like, Doug Bradley, personally, should be heralded and mentioned in the same breath as Bela Lugosi, where they brought so much more to the character that they molded the character into this momentous villain that will live forever. Like, he's not the first macabre, like, destroyer that inflicts pain. Bela Lugosi was not the first vampire. Well, technically, he was the first vampire on film. So that's probably why he gets a lot of credit. But that's not... But my point is, they are iconic. Doug Bradley should get as much... Should get more love than he already gets. He's famous as fuck. Not only, like... I just want more Doug Bradley in my life. That's all. Like, one of my favorite albums of all time is Cradle of Filth's Godspeed on Devil's Thunder. And Doug Bradley narrates the fuck out of that album. And not only does Doug Bradley narrate the fuck out of that album, he narrates that album as Gil DeRay.
Oh, shit.
He's Gil DeRay. That album is about Gil DeRay, and he narrates the album as Gil DeRay. Like, holy... Name an album that is more me than that one.
That is more.
All I needed was, like, some Lovecraft references in that album.
It's... Well, fucking go back, like, an album, and fucking... Cradle of Filth has a whole... H.P. Love... have a whole Lovecraft fucking EP. Yeah, but Doug Bradley, he made Pinhead this poetic, sadomasochistic demon with a love for the English language, like you mentioned a little bit, you know, a little while ago, Fernando. A living, walking echo of past poets, which was a huge 180 to the slasher killers of the 80s, which were mostly dominated by the one-liner zingers that Freddy Krueger literally embodied. Like, when he came out, he was a complete 180 or whatever the fuck was going on. Because he came out... When did the Lost Boys come out? Early 80s, right?
Lost Boys, I want to say 85?
Oh, so it came after. Yeah, but, like, I don't think before... Like, I think Hellraiser... I think Pinhead was, like, the first, like, stoic... Like...
Kind of...
That 80s generation. Like, that whole... wave of like horror movies. I think he was like the first and only like stoic one where you buy into it. You're like, oh, like, holy shit. And like, so famous Hellraiser lore was that for the first movie, Barker kept telling Doug Bradley to keep doing less and less during his takes. When he would say a line, he'd be like, less emotion, less emotion, less, less, less. And that's where the emotionless Pinhead was born. Like, it came out like it was just like, give me, nope, too much, too much. Give me less, 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 less. Bradley plays Pinhead straight. He's not making jokes or doing ridiculous shit, relatively speaking. Like, he does ridiculous shit because, you know, he's out of dimensional fucking demon. But, like, relatively speaking, he's not. Like, jumping from wall to wall.
No.
Like, you don't run away, you know, like, you don't leave him behind in a house running, and then you see him in front of you.
Pops up.
You know, out of the bushes. He's just like this, he's just playing it straight. He's like, he's just, and like, that's why I think we were drawn to him, because how out of left field he is, or was, like, Pinhead always looks like he's supposed to be in another movie. Like, when you see him on film in the first movie, he's this strange leather-clad demon walking around this 1980s pastel suburbia home. You're like, what the fuck am I watching? And he's completely out of place, but he's playing that so fucking straight. You're like, what the fuck is going on? And then that confusion amplifies even more when you hear him talk. And I think it's the voice and the way that Doug Bradley decided to play him that made Pinhead what he is. Because to me, the voice is Pinhead. And that was entirely all of Doug's doing. Because in the story, The Hellbound Heart, Pinhead is supposed to sound like Voldemort. This whispering, breathy villain with a light voice. Which kind of is more reminiscent to the newest Pinhead from the Hulu series. Where she talks like he's kind of whispering, but she's kind of, you know, like, she has a light voice. But it was Doug's slow, menacing voice that made me go like, holy shit, this is fucking cool. And I think without Doug Bradley's performance, we probably wouldn't have Hannibal from Silence of the Lambs. Because outside of those two, is there like a more stoic super, like horror villain? Like, I don't know if Hellraiser wouldn't have been as successful. Would they have made that kind of choice for that?
For that, in that movie.
For Silence of the Lambs. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. But I could just see a correlation between the two. Like, outside of the Hellraiser, there is nothing to draw inspiration from in the horror genre. Or am I wrong?
I can't think of anything, but...
Those are the only two, like, sophisticated British...
it could also be a British thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm going to just say, I'm giving the credit to Hellraiser. Fuck that. But I don't think this all hits the same without the way they were presented in this mysterious, what the fuck way where you start watching the movie and you're already asking yourself, like the first time you see them, you're like, what the fuck is that? And then you finally see them and you're like, who the fuck are they? And then they start walking around throwing chains and you're like, what the fuck are they doing? And then you show this labyrinth and you're like, where the fuck do they come from? These questions just keep appearing almost as fast as these fucking Cenobites. You're just like, I don't know what. You just like, it's just an overload. You're just overloaded with questions and like pictures and you just, maybe that's just me. But, you know, it was genius. Like, I think Alien has that same effect. Because like I said, Hellraiser, the first one, you only see 7 minutes total.
Yeah,
and I think that's what made the first Alien, that much scarier. Because you don't see the alien until at the very end.
So you see build up leading up to it.
You see glimpses of it, and that's what's scary. And I think that's what the Hellraiser movie kind of picked up on. And I think that's what made them more... Like, the fact that you don't see them. They are literally... They eat every scene they are in. But they are very rarely in any scenes at all. So when they do come out at you, you're just like, holy shit. You're just kind of wanting more and more and more. But the more you see them, the more confused and the more questions you have. And I think that's just like, it's brilliant. And I think that's what the other Hellraiser movies lose.
There's too much. You think there's too much in those Hellraiser movies?
Now, that, and I think once they get a backstory.
Oh, okay.
Once they get that backstory, then you're just like...
But see, there's your conundrum because you want to know more because he's just teasing you. So they kind of did what you wanted because they gave you more information, but then they gave you too much.
I don't know what I want. If I knew what I wanted, if I knew what I wanted, I would be making movies. I wouldn't be watching them. and then we leave the movie with almost all of our questions never being answered. I mean, I guess you vaguely get answers here or there, like maybe for one or two of your questions, but they don't give an ounce of dick when it comes to background information about anything. They don't tell you if they're demons, are they? They say they're from hell, but then they say they were interdimensional, and then we're beings of pleasure, and then you're just like, dude, what the fuck are you talking? Where are you from? Where are you like? You're from hell? Where are you? Texas? Like Florida? This is Florida, man. Like yeah. this is Florida, man.
Well, Florida is hell to a lot of people, so it makes sense.
And it's this mystery that makes the Cenobites and Pinhead specifically so fucking cool. Eventually, we find out the Cenobites were once human, you know, and all that jazz, whatever. But that isn't to like Hellraiser 3 and 4. And until then, we're just as confused as we are aroused. You know, but I preferred not knowing anything about the Cenobites, even though I wanted to know. I preferred not knowing, now that I know. I prefer not knowing and having them be this enigma. These secret outer dimensional butchers, instead of them trying to force us to have this human connection with them and giving them like this emotional depth for us to maybe they're not so bad. To them,
humanize them a bit.
Yeah, like their bitch ass backstories. Like Pinhead, he's a bitch ass soldier. Like, suck my dick. But my intellectual and scholarly opinions aside, Hellraiser is a movie for those who are not only not afraid of the dark, but find some comfort in it. And the Cenobites are metaphors for our deepest fears. More on that later. But even more importantly, you can make any trauma you're dealing with cool as fuck if you dress it up as leather and just give it a deep British daddy voice.
You know, I want to hear a conversation between Mr. Freeze from Batman the Animated Series and Pinhead. It's a very similar type of character. The whole low talking, just monotonous. Like,
oh, I mean, that was Doug Bradley. Yeah. Not
what?
Your mind just boom.
Yeah.
Wait, that wasn't Doug Bradley, was it?
I don't think it was. You know which movie I realized I saw for Clive Barker? Rawhead Rex.
I heard of that.
I saw that as a kid. Like,
I've never watched Midnight Meat Train, so I was like, when you guys were talking about it, I was like,
oh, you never watched Midnight Meat Train?
I know. I've heard of it. The guy from the guy who played Juggernaut, right? He's like the main guy or whatever. Yeah.
That's who that actor is to you, Juggernaut?
Yeah. Oh, he's also in all those like
Guy Ritchie movies?
Yeah, the Guy Ritchie.
He's always Bullet Tooth Tony to me.
He's
Bullet Tooth Tony to me. So God. Like it was it's kind of funny that you said Juggernaut. I was like, oh.
I just remember it was Juggernaut.
I'm Juggernaut, bitch.
Bullet Tooth Tony. Bullet Tooth Tony. Isn't he also the Mountain? The Hound?
No.
Someone else. Yeah. I was thinking of Yarp.
No, that's the Hound.
That's the Hound, yeah.
That's the Hound from
Huffuzz.
Huffuzz.
So the Cenobites, also known as the Order of the Gash, are extra-dimensional beings who exist in an extra-dimensional realm and are present in Clive Barker's writings that you already spoke about, Hellbound Heart, Scarlet Gospel, and then they're also present in 11 Hellraiser films.
11, bro. Fucking 11.
They are also mentioned in passing in the novel Weave World. And the character in that book calls them the Surgeons. They can reach Earth's reality only through a schism in time and space, which is opened and closed using certain unearthly artifacts. The most common known of these artifacts is the puzzle box called the Lament Configuration. The Cenobites vary in number, appearance, and motivation depending on the medium in which they appear. The involvement of multiple parties in the production of Hellraiser films and comics have led to varying consistency regarding the canonical aspects of their philosophies and abilities. So in the first one, they're kind of like immoral, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think they really come off as evil besides the way they look.
Yeah, they're
focused.
I wouldn't say anti-heroes, but I guess an anti-hero. But you're right. Yeah. They are immoral. They're not good or bad.
Yeah.
They're just centered.
And I feel like after probably three, they try to make them more.
That's when they get
the villains.
I think that's when they get Christianized and you see them being like the devil and mm-hmm. all that shit. But in the first two movies, you said they're just these weird, horny space, like interdimensional, like butchers, scientists. I mean, fucking yeah,
explorers of the mind.
Like, yeah. Also, fun fact. I mean, not a fun fact. I just thought it was fucking cool. In the latest Hellraiser movie, the one in the Hulu, when the movie starts, when they first introduce you to the puzzle box in the center, in the beginning during the party, some guy walks in and he looks around and it's a whole torture room, and you don't piece it together. You just think it's like a room with a bunch of like pillars and it has like art, like little art installations. But if you know what they are, you're like, oh, he's in a fucking torture room, because in one of the encases, well, one of the instruments that's encased is the pear, which is this old medieval fucking torture device, which they would stick in your butt or whatever, any hole you have, and it'll just spin it, and just spin it, it'll just start opening up inside you. And that was one of the things that's encased in this room. So when you originally see the movie, you're like, oh, it's just a bunch of fancy room. And then but when you finally realize what those fucking things are, you're like, oh, this is not a cool room to be in. Yeah, my bad. I just wanted to vomit that out.
The Cenobites all have horrific mutilations and or body piercings and wear fetishistic black leather clothing, except in the remake, right? It was more like skin.
Yeah, it looked more like...
Yeah, it's all skin. Also, another fun fact. The Pinhead, her skin is scarred to look like Pinhead's original costume from the first movie.
Yeah.
So if you look at the scar, the way her scars are, it's
the design, kind
of. It's the design, the jacket, that Pinhead, that sexy ass Matrix coat he had on.
Their clothing often resembles butchery garments or religious vestments. The clothing also serves to support their piercings and tools, which, you know, you see Pinhead have like a bunch of like butcher tools.
Yeah, he had. They literally look like they have butcher aprons on. Yeah. Like something like Pinhead has a butcher cape. Like this apron. Like he's like the master butcher's apron, which is sick.
This is a little bit of what you touched on. The religious aspects of their origins and motivations are ambiguous despite the presence of the word hell in the franchise. There is no overt reference or iconography linking the Cenobites to any traditional depiction of damnation, demonic torture, or infernal origin. Leaving the most likely interpretation to be that an outside observer, the bizarre and unpleasant properties of the Cenobites' native plane of existence would likely be interpreted to be hell or hellish.
That is true up until they get to the comics. And Fernando, you might touch upon it later. But then, if you don't, we'll get to it. But in the comics, they are literally heralded as a heavenly deity. But more on that later.
Nice.
But that's where they... Like, yeah, but that's... I'm telling you, that's... That ambiguity that the first two movies have, I think is what made Hellraiser. Like, they're not evil. This dude who's in black that's going to kill you and has pins all over his head, he's not evil. Like, yes, he's going to make you die forever, but he's not evil. And it's like this weird contradiction. You're like, you have like this internal battle trying to figure out what they are. You're like, he looks evil. He's doing evil shit. But he's not necessarily the bad guy.
The bad guy in the first movie was Uncle Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy was a piece of shit. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Now I want to talk about their powers and abilities, which can vary depending on the films. Like in Hellbound, which is Hellraiser 2, which is another thing. I don't know if any of you guys know the answer to this. I don't know the answer. The novel that it's based on is called The Hellbound Heart.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they go with Hellraiser as the movie title?
Something I read in the book was they didn't want it to sound kind of like very ambiguous as to it being like Hellbound Heart. It sounds kind of like maybe it didn't put the right emotion as far as being like dark, but like Hellraiser, like that sounds...
Oh, yeah. Hellraiser sounds sick.
But it does. But yeah. It has the word hell in it.
Yeah, but Hellbound Heart does too. But it sounds like a romance novel a little bit, no?
Kind of like a torture kind of romance thing.
You made me sound stupid. You just rebutted the fuck out of me.
I love you. Hey, so in Hellbound Hellraiser 2, when the configuration was solved, they caused the rooms they manifested in to take on the stonework and cyclopean properties of their native realm, the Labyrinth. They all appear to be telekinetic to a degree, able to control the hook chains that are their trademark weapon of choice, as well as snatch small objects at a distance. Though not entirely confirmed, they seem to be able to summon forth their chains from any nearby shadows. They each seem to possess great strength, heightened resistance to damage, and some degree of supernatural empathy. They also tend to be patient, logical, and discerning. See? They're not that bad.
Yeah, they just, you know, they'll just fucking butcher you from out of nowhere with these chains that would come literally out of nowhere. They always come out of frame. They always come out of the dark. And they just come straight for the nipples.
But they're, I noticed they're very patient. Like, if you try to talk to them, they'll listen to you. They won't just be like, ah, fuck you.
They'll entertain to see what you're saying.
Yeah, they'll be like,
well, time out. Okay. We gotta say it.
Yeah. And, like, they take their time. They're walking. They're like, I got forever. Like, they're milking the clock. They're like, I get paid by the hour, not by the body. So I'm walking. They're just chilling. They're just taking their sweet ass time. Cause I mean, I don't blame them. When they're not on Earth fucking people up, they're back in the Labyrinth, and that shit doesn't look that cool.
Yeah,
it looks like it's hot. It's just rocks everywhere. Like, and you're and then your boss is like this big ass fucking butt plug. You're like, it's like fuck this.
There's definitely no AC and no Wi-Fi.
Nope.
In the labyrinth.
That's
you're out right I'm there. Not, you're
I'm,
out.
No yeah. Wi-Fi, no AC. The AC, I'm starting. You know, I'm getting up there in age. My bones starting to hurt, so it's not as important to me. But Wi-Fi, like get the fuck out of here. Like fuck these roaming charges, bro.
So now I'm going to talk about the certain Cenobites. There was a shit ton of them. I thought there was going to be maybe like...
I thought it was just the original squad.
Yeah. You know, I thought maybe like 6, 8, something like that. No, there's a shit ton. But it's because of the comic books and different medium that they, you know, appear in. First of all, we all know him. We all love him. You just talked about him, Pinhead. He's got a lot of cool nicknames. The Hell Priest. The Dark Prince of Pain. The Black Pope of Hell. Also known as just the lead Cenobite. I don't think he's... Is he ever called Pinhead in any of the movies?
No. So,
all right.
So here's a fun fact. That when they were filming the movie, he had... Like, they don't have any names. Right? They don't have... Like, he's not like, oh, Mr. Hellraiser. No, he has no name. There's nothing to go call them by. So with the costume designers, when they were talking about the Cenobites... And they were trying to figure out who's who. They just kept calling him Pinhead. Like, oh, this is Pinhead's cake. This is Pinhead. And Clive Barker actually got mad. He said, why do you guys call him Pinhead? And they kind of looked at him like, are you fucking stupid? What the fuck do you mean? Why are we calling the guy with pins on his head Pinhead? He thought they were making fun of his character. He's like, you bitches. And then as they kept calling it, he's like, nah, you know that. He's like, for some reason, it fits. No shit! No shit!
And that's how you market it, right? Like, you can't make, like... What the fuck? You can't make, like, action figures or, like, statues of, like, something called the Dark Prince of Pain.
I mean, give him a name. I mean, you have Ozzy, which is the Dark Prince, but...
That's Ozzy.
Yeah.
He's earned that. So, Pinhead was once a human known as Elliot Spencer, who was born in England during the Victorian era. You like Victorian shit, Moses?
Yeah, but...
In 1887. As a young adult, he would join the British Army and later serve in France during World War I. This dude paid his dues. I'm not going to go too deep into their histories because there's so much backstory. So much.
We could literally spend an episode per fucking Cenobite.
Yeah, I was planning to give a little more, but then when I started reading up on it, I was like, nah. Y'all can do the research if you so please. And they try or to watch the movies.
No, do the research. Don't watch the research. Don't watch the movies. They're not. Unless you already own them, which if you do, shame on you. Like, if you own. One, two, and three, okay. Four, you're pushing it. But if you own five, and unless it was like a collector's box and you got an offer up for like $10, cool. Yeah, but if you went out of your way and bought them with your hard-earned money at FYE or Blockbuster, because then, you know, I don't want
to
say.
A little off topic here, but I went to FYE recently. They don't even have, like, fucking DVDs there anymore.
What do they offer?
Just, like...
Well, because back then... FYE stands for your entertainment, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Back then, during our days, that was our entertainment, DVDs. Now it's, like, fucking pop figures and vinyls and t-shirts and stupid ass fucking $80 knickknacks. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like they have a whole section that just dedicated to anime, like a huge fucking wall, another wall of just Funko Pops and like little like
those are all the stores at the mall now.
Yeah, like it doesn't differentiate it from like Box Lunch or whatever.
Yeah, Box Lunch, and then there's Hot Topic still.
I used to go to FYE to get deals on fucking used DVDs and shit. Remember when you bought all the Universal Monster movies there?
Yeah, remember when we tried? Remember when we thought it was a good idea? Let's watch all the Dragon Ball Z fucking. Let's start watching all the Dragon Ball Z anime. We bought like 6 seasons. We watched two DVDs, and we're like, yeah, we're done.
Anyway, back on topic. And then I picked this one. Just based on the name you mentioned her recently, Deep Throat. That was the name. That is the name of the Cenobite. She was once a very beautiful woman before she discovered the forbidden temptation of the puzzle box.
Well, I thought she was before the beautiful temptation of sucking dick.
Sensing her worth, she was transformed into a Cenobite, and eventually rose to the exalted position of High Priestess of Hell. Deep Throat is a member of the Gash. Well, so she's part of the I guess the original crew. That's what they're called. Like yeah. the from the first movie, mm-hmm. like
so
Pinhead and
Butterball. All of this lore, the Gash, the art, whatever, you find this out later on in the other movies. Cause eventually you find out that there is a whole hierarchy of Cenobites. It's like a fucking it's like a management office. Mm-hmm. There's supervisor fucking Cenobites. There's team lead supervise. Then there's shift Cenobite supervisors. You're just like, what the fuck? Like Pinhead, he is the lead. He's the imagine if the universe is Target.
Oh fuck.
Pinhead is flashbacks. Pinhead is his shift's team lead. Oh. And the little squad he has, that's his shift. That's the Gash, mm-hmm. right? They're not the only crew. He's not the only team lead. He's not even a manager. He's not even the night shift. He's a team lead. Like, eventually he goes up in the ranks. You find out that God is in on this whole, he's in on this whole thing, and he knows what they're doing. And eventually he's like, all right, Pinhead, you are doing too much. I can't send you to hell because your horny ass is going to like it. So in order for me to punish you, I'm going to do the fucking thinkable. And I'm going to make you a man. Not only am I going to make you a man, I'll make you a poor white man. And then he resurrects him as a bum. And Clive Barker and Doug Bradley character comes out of a fucking bridge or some shit. He just looks at the sky. He's like, no! But yeah.
There's no HR, man. There's no HR Cenobite.
There isn't.
The next Cenobite is one that has not only been in the original films, but was also in the Hulu reboot, remake, whatever you want to call it.
All right, we'll talk about that later.
Chatterer.
That's the scariest looking one.
That's the creepiest motherfucker. He's also known as the Blind Sadist, also known as the Angel of Suffering. I wrote down a little bit of his backstory because I thought it was pretty interesting. As a pre-teenage boy, Chatterer was known as Jim. He frames his mother for the murder of his abusive father and is sent to an orphanage, where he and the other adolescents are taught that they will be useless to society. There, he engages in a relationship with a boy named Seth and regularly prays to the God of Love for affection. And then he becomes a prostitute. Yes, he becomes a prostitute. And his physical appearance would often be complimented by his clients to his disgust. On one day, one of the clients asked him what his deepest desire is, and to which he replied, to be loved. Don't we all? Later, he is asked again by the client what his desire is, this time replying, to be ugly. He got what he asked for. Believing that people would love him for who he is if he was ugly. The client hands him a lament configuration, and he begins to serve who he is told is the god of pain and desire. So that's how he became a
Cenobite. Fuck him! I used to like him! Fuck him! First of all, I want to be loved. That's such a prostitute thing to say. That is such a prostitute thing to say. Alright. Secondly, was he a boy prostitute?
Yeah, a boy prostitute.
So he was hooking while he was still a little kid?
No. That was later on in life.
All right. I don't know
what age. I would say, like, right, you know, right, legal age, but hopefully.
But he was a good looking guy.
Yeah.
And he was so good looking that he thought, oh, people only like me for my dick and the way I look, and not for what I have to offer.
Yeah. I wish I had that problem.
I'm the opposite.
You're the opposite.
Yeah, people don't like me because of the way I look and my dick game. But this guy has pretty privilege. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, you know what? I want to be ugly because I want people to love me for who I am. Fuck you.
This is why you don't like backstory.
Right? Foxy? God, you just ruined him for me, man. God,
speaking
damn it.
Of backstory, this next Cenobite has none of it. So Butterball is an obese Cenobite and appears as Apollo or Pinhead in the movies. He originally appeared in Hellraiser, and despite the fact that he was absent in the Hellbound Heart, the novel, and this is his backstory, I shit you not. Laszlo was an obese and perverted man who found pleasure in sin. That's it.
His name's, he even has a fat guy named Laszlo.
Laszlo.
You know who, you know, I'm going to give him a backstory. Do you guys remember Little Nicky?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the comedian in the beginning who's watching the lady get undressed?
Yeah.
The one
yeah.
that gets fucked by the horny bird?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Laszlo.
That's Laszlo.
That's Laszlo.
Okay, there's one called The Face, which I thought was pretty interesting. And it was also known as Lon Chaney, if you guys know who Lon Chaney is.
I know who Dick Cheney is.
No, Lon Chaney.
And that's a fucking Cenobite. That was a real life Cenobite.
So he was like a character actor from like the 50s. Not the 50s. Is it the 30s? Whenever those Universal Monster movies came out.
Okay.
So the 30s, yeah. And that's what he was known for. So that's why, because he has many faces. So this Cenobite had a large collection of human faces that he staples onto his own head. He was also a thespian, and he ran his own grand theater in hell. So this motherfucker had a theater in hell where he would have plays and shit.
He's a theater kid?
Yes, he's a
fuck this guy.
Hell theater kid. Okay.
All theater kids are seen up. Fuck.
Hold on. But it wasn't like plays or anything like that. It was where he showed the public torment. Doomed to never know the immortality of his precious silver screen, the diabolic actor instead found a small degree of fame in the role of a serial killer before accepting the position of resident thespian in the ranks of the Cenobites. Now his deathlessness is ensured, although the only thing silver about his gleam about him is the gleam of instruments in which he peels back the flesh around his victim's skulls.
I'm trying to picture which one he was.
I don't really know. I'm assuming he's one of the later movies.
Yeah, because he's... All right, yeah. All right, yeah, you're right.
And then I picked this one. This is the last one I'm going to speak of. His name is Baron. And I was reading up on it, and the only reason I picked it was because of you. And then the last episode we did, you went on an insane rant about it. So Baron is a mysterious Cenobite who has been around at least since the 15th century, as he was first mentioned in the personal diary of the notorious child killer, Gil de Rais. Baron was the Cenobite who helped Philip Le Marchand create the Lament configuration and perhaps other puzzle boxes.
Hmm.
So he's like, he predates like all the other Cenobites that we know so far, right?
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, go read up on Gil de Rais. I'm not going to go into the usual 45-minute spiel I usually go into. If you listen to my other podcast, you guys know exactly whatever. But for those of you that do not know, go read up on Gil de Rais. It's a fascinating story. And Baron is the demon that convinces Gil de Rais to kill children. Which is wild that he's a Cenobite. So technically, Gil de Rais is canon. he's Clive Barker canon now.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And then I saw this, and it was a little wacky. This is not a real, like a Cenobite or whatever. But there is a theory that Candyman is a Cenobite.
Ooh.
So both stories, Hellraiser and Candyman, are based off works by Clive Barker. Each character only causes mayhem when they are summoned. To top it off, they all know after their deaths are pain and pleasure. While Candyman has similarities to Cenobites, it would probably be more like Candyman is an agent of another section of hell. Movie version-wise, Cenobites are mostly people who went into hell willingly or were pinhead craft projects, so people he chose. Candyman here has a bit more sympathetic death, but he could have been offered the job by Leviathan with his entry based on his belief. Story-wise, Candyman is still a thing that is summoned into the world by belief, and in the Hellbound Heart, Kirsty wonders if there are other portals into hell. So it's not too far-fetched an idea.
Mm.
He just doesn't have like if he was wearing like leather, like a leather coat, because you know how he has that like
he has the furry trench coat.
If it was like leather, I would buy it into it more or whatever, but. That's a little theory.
I don't know. Like, I feel like they got a little lazy when it came to the black Cenobite. I don't know. You know, those are some of the old, from the original ones. And did you guys like the new Cenobites from the newest installment for the Hulu version?
I like their look, the aesthetic. I don't think it fits into the...
They were all useless.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think it fit into like the whole... What was those two words that Clive Barker said?
Something... something glamour. Something glamour. Repulsive glamour.
There you repulsive go. Repulsive glamour. Repulsive glamour.
They don't have that aspect to them.
I think a few did.
Oh.
Hmm? A few did. So the first... So obviously we have the new Pinhead.
Yeah.
Right? I liked her. I thought that those were huge, huge, huge fucking shoes to fill. Mm-hmm. And I liked what she did with her. I was a little scared that she might have been more animated. But I liked, you know, that she still stayed that stoic. But if you want to pick, you know, there's a lot of people like, ooh. The first thing I heard about when they saw it is like, why do you gotta make her into a girl? La la la. Well, first of all, none of the Cenobites are given a gender.
Yeah.
They're never called he or she.
And we already know that from the ending of, spoiler alert, I'm sorry here, they have no dicks, right?
None.
As far as we know. Yeah.
No dick or titties.
No dick or titties.
And then she actually talks the way Pinhead supposed to talks in Hellbound Heart. You know, she sounds like fucking Voldemort. So off the bat, I liked her.
Also, pretty cool that this is the first time any like horror icon has been recast, like as a woman. I mean, you can't really do that with a lot of them. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
You know what the Cenobites that aesthetic looks like in the new one? This. A lot like her.
The Fifth Element? The Fifth Element. Opera singer?
Yeah. Kind of like, it reminds me of that, but just white. Where it's not, yeah, it's a different look, aesthetic.
I feel Pinhead's, you know, his shift, his target shift, his little Rugrats, they were more mutilated, like skin mutilation. And this new Pinhead's little group, they're more like body mutilations. Because, like, all right, so the first one we have the Gasp, which is the one that looked Asian.
Okay.
You know, the one with the pins, the one who had her...
That arc thing?
Yes, the arc thing, you know, her appearance. She's technically supposed to be two Cenobites into one. Oh. She's supposed to be Deep Throat and Angelique. Angelique, she's from Bloodline. She's from Bloodline. And so they combine both of those into one, and that's the Gasp. That one just looks weird. I didn't find that one too. That one was okay. I think it was just too much as a Cenobite. Like they gave her a whole helmet.
Just say it. I just wasn't a fan of her.
She had nice thighs though. She had nice thighs. I wasn't a fan of her. The one I liked the most was the Weeper. Weeper was the blue one, the one who had black coming out of her eyes, the one who stretched out its arms and its hands split open.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that scene?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's the Weeper, right? I think that's my favorite one, and that's another one that kind of resembles that whole body. That what was it called? Glamour. Repulsive Glamour.
Repulsive Glamour.
There's that one. And there's the Asphyx, which is the one that got stuck on the gate.
Was that the wheezing one?
Yeah, the one who had the one whose face was covered.
Yeah.
The one who had the praying arms. Remember how she had praying arms and then she got loose? And then we had the Mask, which is the one where
Jim Carrey.
The one where it's just a flat... You only see him for a split second. He had a flat face. Mm-hmm. There's that one. The one that looked the coolest, the one that I wish had a little more screen time, which is the one they're calling the mother. The one where the brother's boyfriend is running away from the Gasp and he's going through the statues and then that pregnant lady comes out. That one looks sick as fuck. And that one, to me, I was getting Virgin Mary vibes.
Oh.
Because she had the whole
veil kind of thing.
Yeah, the whole veil and she was pregnant. Like, oh, is she going to give birth to, like, a little Cenobite baby?
Okay.
You know, so, you know, those were the new Cenobites. And I liked them. You thought it was kind of a cop-out. I thought it was kind of cool. I didn't mind seeing Cenobite on Cenobite crime. And even Pinhead, she smiled a little bit when fucking Riley stabbed Chatterer.
Chatterer.
Chatter, when he stabbed Chatterer, and he kind of accepted his fate. He's just like, oh, fuck. And he kind of just stepped back. He's like, all right, go do me. Pinhead smiled. She had a little smirk.
Yeah,
she was like, you bitch. You loopholed the fuck out of this one. Fuck you. But she's like, you got to do what you got to do. And then she ripped the Chatterer to shreds, which is a good thing, because fuck that pretty boy prostitute.
She said, clock out.
Good shit. For the Cenobites, I did want to talk about the differences between some of the difference between the book and the movie Cenobites. As Moses had mentioned that, yes, Pinhead was supposed to be a more feminine character. And I guess the way they described her voice is more girlish, high tone.
Yeah, like she had like a high tone. Yeah.
The puzzle box, the people that stopped the puzzle box in the book were more so chasing. They believed that the puzzle box held like a dark secret or held like powers that would give them that would solve their darkest desire.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So that was a huge difference between this new one too, because you know originally only the most depraved and sick-minded individuals sought out this Pandora's box of fucking pleasure, which is what we end up finding out is the puzzle box. And it's this thing where it's only the sick-minded that go after them. But in this one, it's just like, it's free game. It's just like, whoever gets cut is getting got. Which I found was kind of interesting. But yeah, sorry, my bad. I just wanted.
Oh, and like you mentioned, a Pinhead in the book version, like the whole pins on her its head, its face. They were in the new Hulu movie. They're more true to what the book had described it as being more jeweled type of pins. And I think I read that in the books, the Cenobites were more talkative. And like you said, it kind of makes sense of how you said that. And in the movie, Clyde Barker was asking Pinhead to do less and less. But I think in the movie, in the books, they were a little more
lively
kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the later movies so in the later movies, Pinhead, when they get their backstory and then they get humanized and all this fucking caca bullshit, they start making zingers, start doing jokes, and start having these huge speeches, which are pretty fucking cool. But then Pinhead loses his stoicness or whatever, but he does talk a lot. And in the book, it's more true to character, you know, except, you know, they just don't go all Nightmare on Elm Street funny where they start making like one liners like, oh, you want to see God? I'll show you God. And then he fucking laughs like, what the fuck? Shitty ass fucking Freddy joke. Piece of shit.
Oh, and, another aspect about the Cenobites is how what I want to touch on is like how they're created and how they're chosen or how they're made. Whenever someone opens the Lament configuration and they activate and they call the Cenobites, they kind of choose the person to see if they're either going to become a Cenobite, if they're kind of that depraved, sick mind that would fit the role of a Cenobite, or they'll just be tortured. They'll just be one of the lost souls that are just fucking in the Lament configuration.
So it's like a job interview?
Yeah.
They're like, army recruiters? Oh, let me see if this guy will cut it.
And when they're chosen to be a Cenobite, they do have body... They're disfigured and have body modifications that are done by Leviathan. Or... In the second movie, where that fucking doctor, when she gets lured into the fucking realm by the fucking what's her name?
Well, because he's seeking out seeking out this other dimension.
So when he goes into that box and that fucking dick goes onto his head and shit, like Leviathan was choosing how he was gonna be, and so Leviathan is the one that kind of modifies each Cenobite to show their purpose. Or
you are now. Dickhead.
And that fucking doctor was cool. Like, I like the whole fucking
mechanical. His, yeah, the tentacle thing.
Yeah, the fucking all utensils that came out of his fucking utility fucking finger hands and shit. They are sort of like the clerics of the Leviathan that interact with those who open the Lament Confederation and convert them and torture those who solve the puzzle. And when they become a Cenobite, they do tend to lose their human memories. They forget who they were in the past.
That's true. That's true. We find that out with Pinhead later on.
The Lament Configuration is what the puzzle box is, the Lament Configuration. It was named after Philip Le Marchand, who was an 18th century architect that, was it Gilda Ray that had helped kind of inspire
the Demon Baron. And that's kind of reminiscent to the Devil's Bible, how it was the devil that kind of helped this priest or this monk write this huge Devil's Bible. And like, I don't know, like I feel like Clive Barker, he's pulling obscure references, and the references, his references are just full of lore. So when you kind of know the things he's talking about, you see how rich of lore the Hellraiser really is. Like I didn't realize he had the Baron. Then when you look into Baron, you realize there's all this shit with the Hell Guild Array, and then Baron helped this dude could actually come up with the fucking Lament Configuration. It's fucking crazy. And he did this before the internet.
As far as the Lament Configuration, what I read is that it what helped inspire Philip Le Marchand to make the Lament Configuration was the Box of Sorrows it was point of inspiration that kind of helped bring that about. When he created the Lament Configuration, there was like in one of the movies they explained how he was like seeking out all these like cryptic designs or just like dark designs and putting them into the box. And
what was it? It's I think it's called Sacred Geometry.
Sacred Geometry, yeah,
yeah.
Those
weird angles that somehow tell you who God is. You're like, how is this obtuse gonna tell me who God is? Like, I don't get it. That's probably why Leviathan is shaped like a fucking crystal from Sonic the Hedgehog. I don't know. It might be the angles.
Chaos Emerald.
Yeah, Chaos Emerald. Like, what is this Infinity Stone? Like, why is he, like, that bummed me out.
It's just a
crystal? Fucking butt plug. Like, go on, Fernando.
And the Lament Configuration, like Lewis had mentioned, it is a key that creates a bridge between the Hellraiser dimension and Earth and allows the Cenobites to actually travel between these dimensions. It's an artifact that can be used, but it's not unique to just being a puzzle box. In some of the comics, you do mention that as far as the kind of mechanic you can use to call by the Cenobites can either be something as simple as a crossword puzzle, or even a game of Russian roulette. Like, just that whole, just in the comics themselves, that simple fucking trying to kill yourself and not doing it calls the Cenobites forth towards you. And the way I would describe it is kind of like a conscious effort that you make, that you choose either to pursue certain aspects, and then that calls them forth to you. It can be the puzzle box, but like it's cool that, I don't know, it's just weird that the Lament, like something like that,
I get it. Like it's crazy, and it kind of gives this narrative that the Cenobites are just, they're always looking out for blood. It's like blood in the water. Like the second they smell it, they're on it. You know, it's kind of like sharks. Like I see, the second they smell blood, they go directly to it. And I think that's what the Cenobites kind of do. They kind of, I don't know if it's somewhere, I don't know if it's like a negative emotion or like this a negative despair or melancholy, but it's always troubled people that, you know, that Cenobites always come to. And it's always at the worst fucking, like, point in their lives where the Cenobites are like, all right, I'm here. What do you want? And it's a crazy thing, too, that you mentioned it, you know, before we started recording, that the Cenobites have a lot in common with djinns.
Yeah.
Which is not a, a similarity that I had put that I had seen until you mentioned it. And I was like, you are fucking right. Because they're supposed to give you, when you solve the puzzle box, what do you want? Pleasure forever? And you're like, yes, yes, yes. Like I want to come for always. You're like, okay, here are chains that are going to, that I'm going to sew into your back forever. You're like, that's not at all what I asked. And he's like, that's what I'm giving you. That's like some djinn shit.
Well, the Lament configuration, it's just that one puzzle box that you see in the first few movies. And there's actually different puzzle boxes that have different names associated to them. The other ones that I read a little bit about, just get their names of words. Like another one is the Hollow Heart, that's been featured in one of the other movies. There's also the Triumph of Judas, and the like just a different design shape to them. Once any of those are solved, or once you activate them, a bell can be heard, and the Cenobites will emerge and take whoever solved it to hell to either choose them to become a Cenobite or to just damn them forever.
So it's like a dinner bell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that Metallica For Whom the Bell Tolls like thing. That, oh my god, I'll be mad as fuck if that's what I hear if I'm about to die. Like, god damn it. But why is this song, like, it's a cool song, but you're like, I don't want to die to a sick song. Like, it's gonna bum me out. But that's another difference that they made between the original Hellraiser and the new Hellraiser, was in the original Hellraiser, you solved it once, and Cenobites come, you know, they fucking pierce your nipples, and then you're gone forever. And then that was it. And fucking in this one, like, you solve it once, you're like, all right, bitch, you got five more times. And like, we're going to keep after you. We're going to keep coming after you until, you know, we get six lives or whatever. So that's like, it's, like they just made it harder. Like,
we ramped it up. And lastly, what I do want to talk about is a little more about Pinhead, the backstory behind him. You mentioned he was a British soldier. He was a soldier in World War One. He was a captain, if I recall. After the war, he had survived, and he was suffering like PTSD. He was survivor skill type of thing. He kind of wanted to die with those that he left behind. And that kind of changed, like, he lost his whole aspect of seeing the positive of humanity. And that's when he started seeking out the depravity. And that's what led him to the Lament configuration. And eventually, well, he became Pinhead.
He became the Night Shift Tim Weed at Hell Target.
Once he became Pinhead, pain, he was embodying like the kind of aspect that pain is necessary for those who deserve it. And exactly that's what he would do. Like in the first two movies, he only went after those who opened the puzzle box. But even like when Christy opened it, she wasn't really the one who did it willingly. And he was kind of like following the rules. And when she told him about Frank, like, he wanted to go after Frank because he was a deviant. He broke the rules and kind of going after him. And as kind of the powers you had mentioned, as far as what he could do and what the other Cenobites could do, it kind of did. They had acts like, it seemed like they had telekinesis where they were calling forth the chains, matter manipulation, where they were like just convert, like literally the walls will open up, the gate, the passages will open up. They had some sort of telepathy where they could see, like read or know what was the thing that would your deepest what the fuck could mess you up.
Is this the first in this newest installment? Is this the first time we actually see Pinhead use the pins on his head?
Yeah, I think so.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you came into the movie a little late, but one of the friends, when they get captured, the Pinhead, she takes the pin out of her head, and it's long as shit, dude. I thought it was gonna be like a little, like, no, it's sewing. It's like fucking 4 inches. She takes out this pin, and she has this, well, like one of the friends chained up, and she's laying, like, she's chained up with her, like, so the back is, so I'm pinhead, and this person's back is facing me, but her head is being pulled back. So pinhead grabs the pin and sticks it from one side of her neck. Ooh. To the other. But the cool thing is, in the movie, spoilers, is that the view of that is coming from inside the throat. So you can see her larynx and everything. And you can see the needle pierce all of the flesh, go from one side of the neck to the other. And she, like, she's fucking with her. She's like, oh, I can make you feel. The body is meant to feel a lot more than this. And you're going to feel this forever.
Holy shit.
And I was like, that fucking finally Pinhead uses his fucking pin. You're called Pinhead, not fucking Chainhead. Use your pins. I thought he was gonna hold his breath and all his spins. His pins will fucking fly out like he was a Pokemon. Like he's using needle, like a needle attack or some shit. Like nah, this is it's like he just hold his breath and just blow up and needles fly everywhere. He never did that. But this Pinhead, she's like, you know what? Let me show you what I'm about. And she used the pins on her head and stabbed the bitch. I was like, yes.
That's what you wanted to see. Like, okay. And to touch back at what you had mentioned, and some of the, as far as Pinhead, one aspect of that, he is the reincarnation of Sipitotec, who was the Aztec god of rebirth and seasons. And that god, he was a god who peeled off his skin and invented war and desire for human sacrifices, aside from being, you know, about growth. And
yeah, so, and it's crazy because in the comic, just imagine a buff-ass tan pinhead in Aztec garb. He still has pins on his head, but he's dressed like Apocalypto. Like, you know, with the little man thong and the little sandals. Like, that's you know, the little fucked up haircut with the plugs. Like, that's Pinhead. Like, I was like, what the fuck? It looks so weird seeing, like, I was like, seeing Pinhead dressed up like that. In my mind, I was like, I don't like seeing this white dude dressed like this.
Cultural appropriation.
But it's like, but he looks sick as fuck. And it's only in the comics too, and like, and Clive wrote the comics, so it's like you can't say anything. Like, all right, I guess, fucking Pinhead Tenochtitlan or whatever the fuck. Like, I guess he's Mexican now.
Yeah,
you know, I guess he's fucking from the FA, fucking Sinaloa cartel or some shit.
Hey, they made Namor Mexican Namor. In the Marvel movies. Why not Pinhead?
You're right.
Need some representation too. Because how many Mexicans are there in horror movies?
It's because we pray the horror away. That's why we don't have horror movies. We just go to church and that's it. Like, if you want to make a Mexican horror movie, just make a movie about chanclas. Make a movie about coming home late without telling your parents you're coming home late. That's a horror movie. Ooh. Ghosts. Dealing with ghosts and that's an everyday occurrence. I'm talking from experience.
What about telling your mom you don't want to eat the food she made?
Oh, you want a horror story? When your mom tells you to wake up for church and you tell her no? You've never. That's existential horror, bro.
So you rethink your life.
Yeah, you're just like, all right, this is the day I die.
No, yeah.
Yeah, but like it's. The comics are crazy, and it's from what I was seeing online, it's not a series in terms of like it's one story. I guess it's kind of like his like little novella. It's an anthology.
So it's like whenever he gets an idea, he would make a comic. Like, okay,
I don't know. And like, there's so many different. There's so many. I'm telling you. It's like a fucking, it's like corporate in hell. Like eventually, all of this culminates to literally fucking Pinhead sitting in hell's HR office saying, you know what, bro, we gotta let you go. we have too many complaints. You had too many strikes. You know, you gotta go. And like, he's in there with like the a Cenobite lawyer. He's sitting in a chair, and the other guy, he has glasses on and he's talking to him. And he's like, yeah, dude, like, so God's telling him, you know, you gotta go. He's like, you've been fucking up. Hell, you can't go to hell because, you like it down there too much, and you have too much fun. You know, we don't want to punish you. You got to learn, so we're going to send you back to Earth. That's literally how it ends. It's fucking Doc Bradley wakes up, and he's like, I'm human again. No! And it looked like it was filmed on a fucking, I was going to say iPhone. I'm not giving that movie that much credit. It was filmed on a fucking Razor phone, bro. It's, I don't know. But the crate. You know what, we're going to end the episode. We're gonna stop there. I can rant forever. We're only a few episodes in. You guys know I don't shut the fuck up. But one of the cooler aspects of the later movies is the movies kind of get a little not as good. I'm gonna be nice. I'm trying to do this thing where if I have nothing nice to say, I'm not gonna say anything. So I'm gonna try to compliment them. One of the cool things that I like about the not so good space movie, because Hellraiser, you know, obviously you got to go to space. You cannot be a horror movie franchise and not go to space.
But when is Hellraiser going to the hood?
That's the last one. He wakes up in the hood.
Oh, he woke up in the hood.
He wakes up in the hood.
South Central.
he woke up under the 105. Fucking. I lost my train of thought. God damn it. No. I did. You fucking. You know what? We'll just end it there. But yeah. There you go. Every horror movie franchise has gone to space.
Yeah.
Hellraiser is up there with them. Literally. He's up there with them. And like, that one, spoiler alert, this Elon Musk type motherfucker, he builds a fucking puzzle box in space. That he traps the fucking Cenobites in.
You know, he's supposed to be the last relative of Philip LaMarchand.
Who, Elon Musk or the character in the movie?
The character in the movie.
I mean, Elon Musk probably believes it too.
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, man, this Hellraiser series, man, we could go on forever. And, you know, there's so, like I was mentioning a little earlier, there's so much lore in this fucking movie. Whether it's lore from the characters itself, or lore from the inspirations of where the movie fucking was birthed, movie and books and comic books where they were birthed from. Like, it's just so much for you. Like, you go on YouTube right now and you can pull up a like 6-hour fucking video on the history of Cenobites. Like, there are hours and hours. That's how much this movie has meant to people, where they dedicate all this time to. I've always wondered, when things get to this level, like this, like where the fans themselves get this invested, where they start piecing things together that the writer or creator didn't have. He was like, dude, I was just horny. I was, you know, because Skybark is gay, and when you're gay, you have to love leather. That's just part. Like, it's like, when you're gay, like, you suck dick and you like leather. Like, those are the two things. Like, those are the two, like, requirements.
Those are non-negotiable.
Those are non-negotiable, right? Yeah. And you stay true to the course, you know? And it's, that's what, I lost my train of thought again, because I went straight homo. But yeah, just watch the movies.
Do us a favor. Try to rub one out.
Don't do that. Don't be one of those guys. Don't be one.
Mention rubbing one out. Difference in the books and the movies. That was what Uncle Frank did. Instead of the blood bringing him back, it was
cum. Oh yeah, well,
But he came back.
That's a lot of cum.
And I wonder why Clive Barker didn't use that. That would have been risky. Grosser. Yeah. But then there would have been cum demons and this whole thing. All right. I can see why you didn't do it. Yeah, but there you go, guys. This is official Hellraiser canon. We're moving forward. Everything we said is 100% true. It's part. Clive Barker knows it. He said it's cool with it. You know. I want to know. Do you guys think the latest Hulu installment, is it a continuation or a remake? I want to say it's a continue. it's a continuation. But then again, like, why were you going to continue with the remake, you know, with Pinhead again? But, like, it's damn if you do, damn if you don't.
I think...
You want to call it a remake? No?
I think it could be both, but to me, it's more of a reboot. And the simple reason is that the rules change.
Okay.
From the original Hellraiser. I haven't watched... I'm going to make a confession. I haven't watched, like, the last, like... I think I only watched 1 through 4, so I can't speak for the other movies.
Yeah, the other 86?
Yeah. So, the rules are different in the Hulu... We'll call it the Hulu Hellraiser. Hulu Razor?
Hulu Razor.
Yeah. You know, with the lament configuration and
she the can, 6 steps.
And yeah.
You can use the Cenobites.
Yeah, yeah. So, it changes the rules up a lot. So, I think they made their own, like, lore to it. They're kind of creating their own thing so they can go on with sequels and you already know the rules. So, that's why, to me, it's a reboot.
It's a reboot?
Yes. I think, to me. Yes.
I thought it was good. The first hour, you don't need. I don't give a shit about backstory when it comes to Hellraiser. Like, I'm not watching Hellraiser because I want to know why. Like, I don't even know that the main character, she's addicted to pills. It has nothing to do with the story. Like, I don't care. I don't, like, just give me Pinhead. That's all I fucking wanted. I was expecting it to start like that, like the original did. Just fucking sensory overload of just weirdness. And instead, I'm just blanking out, bro. We just gotta end this episode. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, so thank you guys. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Again, watch it, Hellraiser. Tell us, you know, let us know what you guys think. Reboot, is it a reboot? Is it a remake, continuation? I think it's a continuation. I enjoyed it for what it was. Like, is it my favorite one? No. The first Hellraiser to me is the one to beat. This one, obviously, this one by default is a top 3, top 4 maybe, like by default. It looks a lot better because it's just a newer.
Better graphics.
Yeah, but we're not going to put that against, you know, Woman of Its Time or whatever. But I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. Like you said, a bunch of new rules. Why can't they just make Leviathan cooler, man? That's like, to make him cooler. Like, make him cool, like, I don't care if it's like Men in Black, where like you end up opening the Leviathan, you see like this little weird little alien inside. Make him do that. That'll be cooler than just have him be this fucking crystal. Like, that really pisses me off, man. You have no idea how much that, I was like, fuck you. This whole movie is so amazing, and the big dude in charge is a fucking math equation, like, symbol. Like, fuck you, dude. Like,
don't lie. When you heard Leviathan being the god, you wanted to see tentacles and shit.
Yes! Yeah. Yes! Either that or like a fallen angel or like a... give me something with fangs. Don't give me fucking 90 degree... Don't give me angles. Like, fuck you. Like, man.
Sharp corners.
Yeah, like, well, fuck you. Man, I'm tired of this. Hope you guys enjoy this fucking dumbass episode.
Dicks out for Pinhead.
Dicks out. Thank you guys, and join us next week as we're gonna continue our show.